This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Check.
And now, the news.
Check.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hi, I'm looking for information on the Titanic, Bismarck, PT-109. Can you help me out?
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama, the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. And once in a while, we have a special. And this is one of those fortunate times. My name is Chuck Tomasi, this time without my co-host Craig Stepp. It is my honor to have with me today Dr. Robert Ballard. Robert Ballard is the founding chairman for the Jason Foundation for Education, the president for the Institute for Exploration, and a former senior scientist in the Department of Applied Physics and Engineering at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution in Woods Hole, Massachusetts. He's also a full professor at the Graduate School of Oceanography at the University of Rhode Island. Robert Ballard has led or participated in over 120 underwater expeditions, some of them involving the use of deep diving submersibles. He made many of his dives in the Elvin, a small three-person submersible. And in 1985, he and his research team made their most famous research discovery, the wreck of the RMS Titanic. Dr. Ballard has written many scientific articles and books about his explorations. He's the author of Exploring Our Living Planet, The Discovery of the Titanic, The Discovery of the Bismarck, The Children's Explorer pop-up book, and the science fiction novel Bright Shark. He's received many distinguished awards from universities, museums, scientific societies, and explorers clubs, and has appeared on numerous television programs, including three National Geographic specials. It's my honor to introduce Dr. Robert Ballard. Welcome, Dr. Ballard, to Technorama.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
It's my honor to have you here today. How did you get started in undersea exploration, and what were your early influences that lit that spark?
Well, it was clearly growing up in San Diego, next to the largest oceanographic institution in the world, which is the Scripps Institute, still is. And then right down the street from there was the U.S. Navy submarine base. And that, combined with my passion for Captain Nemo's, the 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, it was just a logical next step to become an oceanographer and a naval officer.
Now, you've been doing undersea exploration for, we'll politely say, quite a few years.
Yeah, my first one was when I was 17 in 1959. I've done 121 since.
Wow, that is an accomplishment.
Well, I have a great team and I have great sponsors, and once you get into the business, it seems so easy to do. I live in fear of ever turning it off that I couldn't restart it.
Now, your name will forever be linked to the name Titanic. We've got quite a few tech and science listeners on our show. Can you give the listener an idea of what type of technology you had to work with in the early days of your exploration and some of the challenges you had back then?
Well, when I went out on my first oceanographic cruise in 1959, it was the Stone Age. You sat in what was called the hero's bucket, which was a cage strapped to the side of the ship, and you lowered things into the gloom on a hydrographic cable. And so that was so primitive. And then years later, not too many years later, when they built the Alvin, once I started diving, physically going down to the bottom of the ocean and got to see what I could only imagine when I was much younger. And now, with the advance of advanced robotics and fiber optics and high definition imagery, I can sit literally in the last few weeks. I haven't even been on the ship. I started the cruise. I went out on we had a big cruise in the Black Sea, but then I fell back to a command center near my house. It's on Internet 2 at 10 gigabits of bandwidth, and I'm sitting there in a television studio with a headset on, talking to everyone as if I was in the next room. So it's really progressed remarkably since my early years of going to sea.
Well, you've already trumped my next question about what are some of the advances of undersea exploration. We've kind of talked to that. We've talked to Tom Dudchick in the past and at Immersion Presents. And for those that missed that interview, can you tell a little bit about your connection with them?
Well, Internet 2 is the new highway of tomorrow. It makes Internet 1 look like a dirt road on the information highway. It started in the universities, and all major universities in the United States are connected to Internet 2, but now it's branching out into schools and other educational institutions, and someday, not too far off, I2 or certainly that kind of bandwidth will hit your house. And when it hits your house, it'll change your life forever. I'm lucky to be on Internet 2 now, and in many ways I feel like I'm living in the future. And it's amazing, the empowerment with that kind of bandwidth, what you can do. It's really going to be altering so many aspects of our life. We'll probably do more and more electronic travel instead of physical travel. We'll have access to incredible places. The world's getting wired. I can watch marine sanctuaries at my leisure from my desk. I can actually control cameras on all around the world. Just type in an address and start flying. So it's really amazing where we're headed, and in fact, like I say, for some of us, where we already are.
How has that impacted the JASON project? Actually, let's back up a little bit and tell the listener about the JASON project for those who aren't familiar.
Well, when I found the Titanic, I came home and there were 16,000 letters from kids saying, you know, what do I have to do what you do? It looks like a lot of fun. It looks like you're playing the ultimate video game, and we really are. And so we saw in their interest in Titanic an opportunity to interest them in science and technology. So ever since, we mount expeditions specifically for children. We've broadened it beyond JASON, which is really focuses on middle school. We now have a program called Immersion Presents that deals with after-school programming. We also broadcast into, you know, science centers and aquariums and museums around the United States. It's really a cradle-to-the-grave kind of exposure using our advanced technology that we call telepresence, our ability to beam you down like in Star Trek, to beam you to the bottom of the ocean and put you right there.
That is so fascinating. I have got to get more involved with that. That sounds really intriguing. You mentioned museums, and earlier this year you said you were going to take a trip to the British Museum with your son. Did you make that trip?
I certainly did. We completed the journey that started in Athens last year on the Acropolis, and we saw the Elgin marbles, and you know, I obviously think they really belong back in Greece. Don't know if they're going to get there anytime soon, but we also saw the Rosetta Stone that probably belongs back in Egypt. So, no, we were able to do that and had a wonderful trip with my 13-year-old as he begins to see the world that's in a much larger context.
That is a fascinating place. I was there in March, and I had a similar reaction that, you know, some of these things really ought to belong back where they came from. I know there's a big controversy about the Pharaoh.
At the time, they were really saving them from their destruction.
That's true.
But we're past that time, and it's like, you know, removing things from the Titanic is such a primitive thing when you can establish underwater museums. I mean, I just spent the summer in the Black Sea and excavating two ancient shipwrecks, and we brought up in one site, we didn't even bring anything up. We actually are building an underwater museum down on the bottom of the ocean. I mean, you don't go to Gettysburg with a shovel. You don't take belt buckles off the Arizona. You create memorials. And now the technology that we were just talking about of Internet 2 makes it possible to wire the world not only above the water but below the water and to be able to provide access to them. Going to the Titanic has a much greater sense if you go to the spot. You know, it's not only the ship, but it's the place where it all happened. And again, it's like me showing you a belt buckle and saying this is from the Arizona. It has no meaning. But when you're at the Arizona and Pearl Harbor, it has all sorts of meaning.
You mentioned Gettysburg, and I know that has some special meaning to you. You I believe you had family involved.
I have family on both sides of Pickett's Charge. It was the darkest moment in my family's history and America's history. With the Civil War was such a terrible, terrible time in our history. And when you go to Gettysburg and stand at that spot and see that little sign, high water mark of the Confederacy, and then realize what happened there that day, the ground speaks to you. It's a very powerful And so that's the kind of feeling you have when you're at the Titanic or you're down at the Bismarck or you're at any of these historic spots that we've discovered under the ocean. They need to be protected. They need to be preserved. And so future generations can have the same feelings I had.
This is Ronald D. Moore from Battlestar Galactica, and you're listening to Technorama.
I've been a diver for 30 years, and I've always got this perspective when I'm underwater of trying to picture what this wreck was like when it was sailing and when there were people walking on the decks. Do you go through some of that as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when we went down with our little robot down the promenade of the Titanic, looking in the windows, you felt like you were a passenger. When we went down what used to be the Grand Staircase, I mean, you couldn't help but imagine what it was like to be there. So, yeah, you have this sort of flashback kinds of sense of what was it like to be there when it was floating on the ocean as a beautiful ship that it was.
They're time capsules, and it transports you back in time. It's a great feeling.
Well, and that's what we're doing now with these ancient shipwrecks. In the Black Sea, because of the anoxic layer, there's no oxygen down there. It's perfectly preserved. They're mummified.
Well, tell me a little bit about that trip. What were your objectives for the Black Sea trip?
Well, we had two primary objectives. One was to conduct the first deep water archaeological excavation, which mm-hmm. we did. We were able to excavate two shipwrecks. We obviously didn't finish. It takes several seasons. But we were able to demonstrate to the archaeological community that we now possess the technology to excavate at great depths, 12, 20,000 feet beneath the sea to archaeological standards. And so we had a number of critics. There's archaeologists who came aboard, you know, somewhat critical that it couldn't be done, that were just blown away by what they saw and did, and now we hope they'll go and spread the word. The second mission was really getting ready for America's new ship of exploration, the Okeanos Explorer, that's coming online in the spring. And its mission is a wonderful mission. Its mission is to go where no one has gone before on planet Earth. But when it goes out there and it explores in remote parts of the planet, we have no idea what it's going to find. We don't know if it's going to be a geologic formation never seen before, new life forms, an archaeological site. So it's impossible to fill the ship with experts. So we're running it very much like a hospital runs an emergency room. A hospital has no idea what the ambulance is going to bring to them at 2 o'clock Sunday morning. So they don't have a hospital full of experts waiting for a head injury or a premature pregnancy or a heart attack. They have doctors on call, and when they need them, they call and bring them in. Well, that's what we're doing with this ship. But instead of physically bringing them out to the ship, which is impossible for thousands of miles out to sea, we're going to replicate the command center. We've now built six of them, and that's what I was in one of them at Mystic. And you just go into that replicated command center, turn it on, and you're on the ship. You have complete command control of the ship, and we just beamed you aboard, and that's the marvels of telepresence technology. And that was extremely successful. We were able to do that with experts all across the country that were beamed aboard, and now we're ready for the maiden voyage of the ship, which will start in the spring.
Now, we mentioned the Titanic. You had Jason Jr. You've mentioned Little Herc before. There's a new underwater vehicle on the scene for this past trip. Can you tell us a little bit about Dory?
Well, Dory was an AUV. In fact, we're working with the University of Delaware. We're moving now to what are called autonomous vehicles, AUV, autonomous underwater vehicle. And it's sort of like the Predator planes you hear so much about flying missions in Afghanistan. These are operated remotely. And they're able to gather data, but more importantly, move significant distances away from the ship. When we find an ancient shipwreck, we're basically on the trade route, on the I-95 of the ancient world. And they're marked, but these trade routes are marked by ancient rubbish, you know, where they threw amphoras overboard that mark it just like beer cans mark it to this day. So when we're excavating a site, which really locks us into one position, and we stay there for days and days and days, we're able to send these other AUVs, they're sort of like our hunt dogs, we're able to send them down the trade route and say, now go down that trade route and go down 50 miles and see if you see anything better than what we're working on, come back and tell us. And so that was our initial practice scene with this one a particular AUV, and we're building a new one. I haven't named it yet. I have to come up with a name. But we'll have it online by next summer, and we'll be using it in the field to search for even more significant shipwrecks, maybe ones from the Bronze Age, that will be located along these trade routes we're just discovering.
That's got to be a terrific time saver.
Should be. And a money saver.
That's even better. Will the Black Sea Expedition be turned into a television special?
Yes, the National Geographic had a film crew aboard, and it'll probably be aired either late this year or early next year on National Geographic Channel.
Oh, I look forward to seeing that. What has been your favorite expedition to date?
Oh, I've had lots of favorites, you know, in 120 expeditions over more than 40 years. It's been there's so many. I've had certainly our discovery of the hydrothermal vents in the Galapagos Rift was the most significant, far more significant than finding Titanic, because this was a real, honest, new discovery.
Mm-hmm.
The first expeditions we did into the Mid-Ocean Ridge, the largest mountain range on Earth,
mm-hmm.
was wonderful. The clearly Titanic, Bismarck, finding PT-109. Finding ancient shipwrecks, doing programs for kids. It's impossible to pick out one as my favorite because I've had so many wonderful trips. I hope my most important one is the one I'm about to do.
Any hints on what that might be?
Well, we're going to be, you know, back into the Black Sea. I would really love to find that ancient Bronze Age shipwreck perfectly preserved that followed in Jason and the Argonauts' footsteps in search of the Golden Fleece.
Would you say that would be your ideal expedition?
I'd say that would be pretty ideal if we could find a perfectly preserved ship from the Bronze Age. Ideally, with the crew still draped over their oars.
That would be something to remember.
Definitely. That would be something to really remember.
Let's turn this a little bit tech. What are some of the tech items that you just cannot do without these days?
Well, Internet, too. I can't live without Internet, too. I can't live without high definition, fiber optics, microprocessing, dynamic positioning, digital GPS, all these new things that make what we do possible. I'm looking now at these new 4K cameras, this new RED 1 cameras that have 4,000 lines and can be projected on a hemisphere to give you a real you are there thing. I'm just more and more excited about the ability to beam people around in a quality way to places that they never thought they were able to go to and think they're there.
I'm looking forward to that. We talked to Chuck Allman down at Discovery World in Pierre, Wisconsin, and
yeah.
I was drooling over the technology.
Absolutely. That's what's going to be in your house is going to blow away a 50-inch plasma. You'll think of the present high-definition cameras as two cans and a string in a few more years.
And you're out there trying it out for us.
You bet. I'm living it now, and it's a lot of fun.
I'm coming to your house this weekend.
All right. Well, I'm going to watch the Red Sox and the Yankees tonight.
You mentioned a return to the Black Sea. Are there other expeditions coming up or on the drawing table?
Oh, there's lots. Well, certainly the maiden voyage of the Okeanos Explorer, which will be in the Pacific. I want to work in the Eastern Mediterranean off of Turkey. There's tons of things to do. It's just trying to organize them, making sure you get the sponsors that will let you go explore. But fortunately, National Geographic and the U.S. Navy and NOAA's Office of Ocean Exploration, as well as private individuals, have been very good to me, and I hope they remain good to me.
A recent article in Canada.com a couple of weeks ago noted that Canada has beat the U.S. to Titanic legislation. Any thoughts or comments you'd like to share on that?
Well, I hope they do. I haven't seen, you know, I've been at sea for a month. I know that England beat everybody in creating a memorial for the Titanic. I'd love to see that. I'll have to go and Google it and see what you're talking about. But America's very close to passing legislation as well. But I'm glad that Canada's out on point, if that's true. Good for them.
I'll send you a link.
Thank you. That'd be great.
Thank you very much again. It's been a real honor and a treat. Appreciate it.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And thank you for listening to this special edition of Technorama. We appreciate you giving us your time. If you're interested in other interviews or you want to check out the regular show, please visit chuckchat.com. You can contact us on the listener line at 206-222-2428 or drop us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com. We'd love to hear from you. I want to give a special thank you to Tom Dudchick at Immersion Presents and Sandra Witten at the Institute for Exploration for helping me set up this interview. The show is a proud member of Friends in Tech. You can find more information at friendsintech.com, and we're also affiliated with Farpoint Media. Find this and other great content at farpointmedia.net. If you like this show and you want to receive new shows automatically, consider a free subscription at the website chuckchat.com. If you'd like more information, send us an email at technorama@chuckchat.com. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, a binary high five. 101.